Through the Gryffindor is brought to you by Wizarding Candles. Ever wish you could bring the magic of the Wizarding World right into your home? Well, now you can with our very own collection of Wizarding Candles. We work hard to make sure that these aren't just candles. We aim to offer a brand new enchanting experience each month. All of our handcrafted candles are inspired by iconic places, spells, creatures, and relics from the magical world. Whether it's the cozy scent of the burrow or the mystical aroma of the enchanted forest, our candles transport you to the heart of the magic. The fun doesn't stop there. Hidden at the bottom of every candle is a surprise charm waiting just for you. Each charm is a unique keepsake and carefully selected to match the theme of each candle. We have new scents every single month, and you can save 10% on a subscription when you sign up at wizardingcandles.com.
Welcome, dear listeners. I'm Jonathan Carlin.
And I'm Benjamin Carlin.
And we invite you to join us through the Gryffindor, your one-way ticket to the enchanting world of Harry Potter. So grab your wands and dust off your broomsticks and join us as we unlock the mysteries behind Prisoner of Azkaban, Chapter 20, The Dementor's Kiss, the shortest chapter in the entire series.
We did this episode live in Sacramento, and all I can tell you is that I was like so nervous going into that show
because I
was like, is there going to be enough to make it a show's worth? And I have no idea how today will end up going, but the thing that I can say is that despite being short, it's pretty action-packed.
It is extremely action-packed. So much of the entire book is building up to this point, and then this point is basically everything that the next chapter is going to set to not undo, but like relive.
Yes, yeah. Kind of like recontextualize, yes, so to speak. And I've definitely got some notes on that front in terms of how everything works within the Wizarding World that I'd like to cover in today's episode. I think there will be some exciting thoughts to explore for this chapter, even if they're just fun thought experiments, if nothing else.
So yeah, absolutely.
but before we dive on in, we of course need to discuss the chapter art.
Yes, we do.
Which I personally think we have depicted here is you have Harry, who is getting ready or is attempting to cast sort of like the non-corporeal Patronus.
Yes.
He is surrounded by Dementors, and there is someone laying on the ground next to him.
There is, and there's a lot. There's so much happening in this tiny little picture. For one, Harry's wand is so long.
This looks like the move in the films he makes when he takes the Sword of Gryffindor to stab the basilisk.
Yeah.
Like, it is a tremendously, like, he is holding a saber.
A saber, but yeah, it's a very long wand. But perhaps even more importantly than his wand is that he is also wearing a cape.
Yes!
Why is he wearing a cape? Don't know.
Because he's the hero, Jay.
Because he's the hero.
Because he's the hero.
I know. Love the cape. And then on the ground, you can see somebody lying next to him, as you said, and it is so hard to get a good look at their face. They're wearing a striped shirt, and inside of the chapter, he's like rushing over to fight the Dementors off of Sirius. That's, of course, like the iconic scene in the movie.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah.
But the striped shirt certainly like would align with anybody's sort of like clip art version of like, you know, prisoner.
Guy who broke out of prison.
Yes.
Yes.
It looks to me more like Hermione.
I agree. I think when you kind of get like, if you try and like look really closely at the face, it does look more like Hermione, though.
Who is also in the scene.
Yes, who in the book chapter is present at the scene and does collapse right next to Harry as well.
Yes.
So it feels like it would make more sense to be serious, but like to me, it's actually Hermione in the picture.
I know. Yeah. It's kind of a silly one. So that one's sort of just a little bit like open to interpretation.
Yes.
And then of course the other iconic detail of this particular chapter art is all of the hooded figures in the backdrop that are all of the Dementors just sort of like,
yes,
creating a wall.
A wall of Dementors. And it is like this particular chapter art inspired a theory while we were on tour. And then also we've already actually made it on Super Carlin Brothers here.
Yes, indeed.
Which is death like from the tale of the three brothers, crafter of the Deathly Hallows, a Dementor.
Yes, almost like Dementor number one.
Like Chief Dementor.
Yes, exactly. Because, yeah. Like, I mean, I think when it kind of comes down to it, like when you imagine like a Grim Reaper-like character, you sort of always get this like sort of skeletal, like black-cloaked figure.
Yeah.
And at the very least, we know that the Dementors are depicted as being, you know, like black-cloaked figures, but more of like with this like scaly, scabby sort of like skin texture.
Yeah.
They don't have eyes. They don't really see things. It's kind of strange. It seems like at times there are like moments where it seems like people are going and having discussions with the Dementors, and it's like, how does that all...
How's that working?
Yeah. Like, yeah. What are they saying? You know, do they go home after a long day's work to their Dementor kid? You know,
certainly not.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like it. They're
but yeah, the way they're depicted here looks very Grim Reaper-y.
Yes.
Like how you typically imagine death. And then like when you think about it, like death has got, like, he gives Ignotus the Cloak of Invisibility.
Yes.
So, like, death has an invisibility cloak. And like one of the things about Dementors is that they are invisible to Muggles. Like, they have an invisibility power.
They do have an invisibility. Yes. So you have that parallel. So you almost wonder if, like, what made them visible to wizards is almost because Chief Death himself, the first Dementor, gave away his Cloak of Invisibility.
And
that is why the wizards can see them.
Yeah, could be that for sure. But then you also feels like Death's a lot more cunning than your average Dementor, you know, can make all these objects and stuff.
Yes.
And it's sort of like, well, like, what would make Death, like, what would chart, like, what would, if he started as a Dementor, like, what makes him better? And you'd think, like, well, if he's Death, he's probably got, like, tons and tons and tons of victims. But, like, victims of the Dementors are people whose soul they consume. And, like, in Harry Potter, your soul is basically, like, your personality.
It's not your life source, but for all intents and purposes, it's all that matters.
Right, right. Like, you can still be alive, just, like, not have any personality afterwards. You're basically just, like, a husk of a person. So, like, the theory would go that Death himself is, like, the oldest and most successful Dementor and has consumed so many souls that it has given him actual personality. He's like evolved into a new being.
Yes.
In a sense. Still has like the invisibility-ness about him. Well, maybe not anymore because he gave it to Ignotus.
Possibly so. Yep,
yeah.
Yep. Yep.
There's that. And then...
The other big thing is the fact that like Death is out there and he feels cheated out of the lives of these three brothers because they've created the bridge. And so it's almost like he wants to and almost manufacture circumstances to ultimately collect or attempt to collect two out of three of their lives or souls.
Yeah. So it's like Death is collecting souls too. The difference is that like where a Dementor can only get your soul, but like leaves you alive. It seems like Death also kills you.
Death also seems to kill
which
you.
Which just yes. still seems like more powerful Dementor.
More powerful Dementor, yeah. So with all of that in mind, we won't give away too much too early, but I think that there is something to keep this idea in the back of your head as we progress through this chapter, because I think that there is a possibility that Death himself is present.
Is present.
Yes.
Is present.
Yes,
so,
indeed. So keep that in the back of your mind.
Just keep that theory in the back of your mind, because that was a really fun one. I was just like, wait,
just one second.
But so anyway, before we get to any of that, we've got everyone is still in the Shrieking Shack. Snape has been knocked out. He's sort of floating along there. Everyone's sort of like tied up together and they're trying to get back out to the grounds so they can turn in Pettigrew and clear Sirius's name.
Yep.
Random little thing. So we say, you know, Harry never been part of a stranger group because they're all like, you know, configured in such a weird way. It says what Pettigrew and Ron were next, looking like entrants in a six-legged race. For what it's worth, they would actually be more like in a four-legged race, I think, right?
Oh, yeah.
For like, you know, not that it really matters or anything. There are six legs total in play, but if you have two people in a three-legged race, you have four legs and it's still called a three-legged race, right?
Yes. Okay. I have read this exact same line so many times that I've been like trying to determine as to whether or not I'm stuck on it. Because if normally the like at field day at school or whatever, you would do a three-legged race.
Yeah.
Where you would tie two people's like
middle legs together.
Yeah.
That they then have to stride at the same time, but then they each have one independent leg of their own, meaning two people make a three-legged race.
Yes.
But if you have three people tied side by side by side, it doesn't work quite the same as doubling because you have an independent leg, a shared leg,
a shared leg, and an independent leg.
Yeah. You're right. It's a four-legged race.
It's a four-legged race.
It's just a clean error.
No math budget.
No, none whatsoever.
Nope. That's okay. This is just wrong. I also learned another Harry Potter term the other day. It's called a flint.
A flint. Oh, yes.
A flint. So this is a sort of a flint, if you will.
It's a sort of
flint. Sort of flint.
I'll let you explain because you discovered this thing, but okay. I have found several of these.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah. Go
so ahead. We've actually discussed them plenty of times on the pod before, but we now have a name for them.
Yes.
Within the world of Harry Potter, basically continuity errors or just like calendar errors are called flints because once upon a time, in Harry's first year, he is introduced to Marcus Flint, the sixth-year captain of the Slytherin Quidditch team. But by Harry's third year, this book, Marcus Flint is still the captain, and he should have graduated by that point.
He's just a super senior.
So it's just a complete error in printing, and it's one of those things that's so easy to like fix in later editions.
Yes.
Where it's just sort of like, oh, actually, he's a fifth year when Harry meets him. Not a problem.
So give me clarification, because I want to know if I actually am using the term correctly. So, because a lot of times if there is a sentence in the story that has been rewritten throughout the years, like the audiobook is always basing it off the original copy because they just recorded the original script.
Yeah.
And so that always sort of lives on because they're obviously not going back and like re-recording the audiobook.
Yes.
But this is a recent printing of the story. So every time something has changed, I'm always like, hey, wait a second, that's different. So one of the details that's going to come up a lot in this chapter in particular is that there's a big tonal shift when it comes to referring to Sirius as a character, where he has throughout the whole story been referred to as Black. And I feel like a lot of times when they're referring to him by his last name, they are usually referring to him as the criminal. However, for Harry at this point in time, he has become Sirius instead because they are now on like a first name basis. They care for one another. So all throughout this chapter, almost every single time in the book where it says in my book right now that I'm looking at where it says Sirius, almost every single time the original copy said Black.
Oh, okay.
So I'll bring up a couple of them as we go and be like, oh, nope, see?
That is super interesting. It is a good like tonal shift for Harry. I don't think that qualifies as a flint because it's not really an inaccuracy. It's just sort of like an updated viewpoint sort of thing.
Yeah, it's like, okay, this one is like actually like, it's like, it plays better.
Yeah.
Someone came in and it was sort of like in like The Social Network when Justin Timberlake's character is like, Drop the. It's like, oh yeah, you're right. It does sound better when Harry refers to as his beloved godfather as Sirius and not by Black.
Black.
Yeah.
The criminal Sirius Black. Yes. Okay. So there you go. That's another good little thing you've got right there. Let's see. Okay. So as we are exiting the house, we get the description of Snape, who said he's being held up by his own wand, which is being pointed at him by Sirius, which I just highlighted that because we will eventually learn from Snape's worst memory in Order of the Phoenix that this is an extremely maraudery looking scene.
It is like
in that particular sequence, James hoists Snape in the air, and they're just sort of like floating him around. So the fact that one of the Marauders is now controlling a floating Snape again.
I know.
Has got to just be like Snape's unconscious, fortunately for him, because otherwise this has got to be like just like reliving the worst, like his literal worst memory.
Yes, yes. Yeah. I mean, yes, that is exactly how that chapter is described. It is exactly, I think, how Snape views it. This is real. It used to be Levacorpus. Now it's Mobilicorpus.
Yeah.
But you're right. And the only thing I would say, and this is, I brought it up in the last week's chapter as well, is that it was Snape's intention to drag Lupin the whole way back through this passageway and back up to the castle. So my empathy for him is low.
Yeah. I agree. It seems like Sirius's empathy is pretty low as well, because it says he kept bumping his Snape's lolling head on the low ceiling. Harry had the impression Sirius is making no effort to prevent this. Which I love. He's just like, yep, whoops, don't, oh, sorry about that, don't, oh, oh yep. Whoops.
Okay, and I'm so glad you read it that way because, yeah, Harry had the impression Black was making new effort to prevent this.
Oh, okay.
Yes, is what it says in the audiobook.
Wow, yep. Okay.
So that's like one of those right there.
There it is, right out of the gate.
Yep.
But so then we have just an extremely, like, pivotal conversation in terms of, like, how it will contextualize, like, Harry's, I don't know, outgoing viewpoint of, like, fairness and stuff, where he says, like, you know what this means, turning Pettigrew in, and Harry says, oh yeah, you're free, and he says, yes, but I don't know if anyone told you, but I'm your godfather, and, like, this is where he offers basically to let Harry come live with him if he doesn't want to live with the Dursleys, and because in fact something happened to his parents. And it is, like, it is so heartbreaking that this never comes to pass. This offer never comes to pass. And it feels like that's almost the point of Sirius, to have, like, given Harry a glimmer of hope only for it to be taken away again.
I remember the first time as a kid reading this and having that, like, opportunity presented to me and just being like, no way, he gets to leave the Dursleys.
Yes.
Like, this is going to be so much better. Mm-hmm. Like, yes. I mean, it was like palpable relief. You're just like, this is the best win ever imaginable. But, you know, and it's like, yeah, you're right. I totally agree with you, because Sirius, we just did a video recently where we were, like, ranking all of the characters in terms of their importance as it pertains to the ultimate downfall of Voldemort. And it was one of those where it was like, Sirius ranks kind of low, and you're like,
no.
You're like, he doesn't actually help with the fight against Voldemort. Like, I mean, he's very important to Harry. I think Harry learns a lot from him in, like, very intangible, like, ways.
Yeah.
And I think he, like, serves to represent as, like, a major catalyst and stuff like that. So I'm not trying to dismiss everything, but, like, Sirius's own actions in the battle are a little bit more limited.
Yes.
You know, than some of the other major characters.
Absolutely.
But, before we get there, though, we've been harping on Sirius for so long for the past several chapters for phrasing everything in the worst possible ways.
Oh, yeah.
And constantly being like, you know, of course I was responsible for the death of Lily and James. Like, you know, and it's like, okay, Sirius, calm down.
Just bring it down. Break it down.
I feel like this scene is almost like flipping the script a little bit, and Harry does the same thing.
Yes.
For one hot second, where Sirius is a little bit, like, insecure. You know, this is a guy who is, like, confident in every environment, and I think presenting this to Harry, he's like, I think he feels vulnerable in doing so. But he sort of like leads with hedging. He says, I'll understand, of course, if you want to stay with your aunt and uncle, but, well, think about it. Once my name's cleared, if you wanted a different home. And then, to which Harry responds, what? Live with you? He said, accidentally cracking his head on a bit of rock protruding from the ceiling. Leave the Dursleys. And then, you know, so it's like, from Sirius's perspective, it's like, I don't know how you're reading this. Like,
right.
Of course I thought you wouldn't want to, said Sirius quickly. I understand. I just thought, are you insane?
I know.
And it's like, Harry, come on, man. Like,
yes. Thankfully, he recovers quickly.
Instantly.
It says, yes, of course I want to leave the Dursleys. Have you got a house? When could I move in? Which, like, Sirius does have a house, I guess, number 12 Grimmauld Place.
Yep.
But it's like, would that be where they went if Harry moved in, or do you feel like you just get a whole new place?
I have no idea. I've always assumed that it would be number 12 just because Sirius does end up living there eventually, but I'm not sure if that's more because of the protective, you know, nature that, like, the long-standing Black history has, like, given to the place.
Yeah.
I want to say in Order of the Phoenix at some point, Sirius says something to that tone. Does that sound familiar to you?
I think so. It's curious to me that in between now and then, like, for all of book four, despite having a house, he will not go to it.
He doesn't go to it. And the best argument you can make there is that he just wants to keep staying close to Harry because of all the weird things that are happening.
Yeah.
You know, during Goblet of Fire and his name being thrown in, and he's in the tournament and this, that, and the other.
Yeah.
So it's hard to know if that's just Sirius being like, well, I've been on the run this long, may as well just, like, keep it up.
Yeah.
You know, or maybe number 12 just hadn't been, like, invented yet.
Yeah. Also quite possible. I also want to, like, point out something else. So before Harry does this whole, are you insane thing, that when Sirius first offers it. He says, I'll understand. Yeah, but think about it. Once my name's cleared, if you wanted a different home, it says some sort of explosion took place in the pit of Harry's stomach. So that is Harry realizing all of a sudden, like, what Sirius is suggesting to him. Like,
yep.
You can come live with me. And it's important to realize that Harry, prior to this moment, knew Sirius Black was his godfather.
Yes.
Like, he is aware of, like, that assignment in his life, and yet it is only in this moment when he has come to, like, the realization that
he can personally benefit,
that he can personally benefit from it, which I think is such an important like distinction for Harry, because it means that when Harry goes over and, like, stops Sirius and Lupin from killing Peter, he does not have it in his head that, like, oh, I need to make sure I clear Peter's name, because then Sirius will be free and then I can live with him.
Right.
Like,
which is in drastically stark contrast to what we just saw from Peter all of last chapter, where it's just basically like, you never did anything if you weren't going to benefit from it yourself.
Yes. I mean, it's like, I think Sirius says directly, you never did it. He tells Peter, you never did anything unless you could see how it would benefit you. And then, you know, Peter says, what was to be gained by not joining Voldemort? And Sirius says, like, only the saving of innocent lives.
Right.
And it's like, this is exactly it. Harry has, in his mind, when he's doing it, he is not doing it for personal gain at all.
Yeah.
Like, all he is doing is saving innocent lives. He does not know what's in it for himself. So it is the exact polar opposite of what Peter is doing. So I love that is included, that it's like Harry had no idea about what personal benefits he would get from this.
Exactly. Yes. Exactly. Yep. No, I agree with you completely. And so then you have, like, the really, like, magical moment that comes from all this, because and this is another one of those lines where, again, they've changed it from Black in the original publication to Sirius, because before it would have said Black turned right around to look at him, instead of Sirius turned right around to look at him. This is kind of important. It's an important moment. Let's see here. You want to, he said. You mean it? Yeah, I mean it. Sirius's gaunt face broke into the first true smile Harry had seen upon it. The difference it made was startling, as though a person 10 years younger was shining through the starved mask. For a moment, he was recognizable as the man who had laughed at Harry's parents' wedding.
Mm-hmm.
That is so important.
That is so important.
Because, like, the monumental detail that was so vital to Sirius being able to survive inside of Azkaban for all that time is because he knew he was innocent, but that wasn't a happy thought.
Yes.
This is the first time he is recognizable as the man who laughed at Harry's parents' wedding.
This is Sirius having an extremely happy thought. The first happy thought he's maybe had in over a decade.
Yes.
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 So bear that in mind as we trudge forward through this tunnel.
Yes.
Bam. So let's see. So they finally get to the exit of the tunnel, Lupin, Pettigrew, Ron clambering up. It's surprising to me through all of this that, like, Pettigrew is being, like, so compliant a little bit, you know, because, like, it seems like if you're him, you're going to be doing, like, there's no reason not to try to run, you know, even if they knock you out again, like, so what, like, you know, you're already dead.
I mean, yeah, this is classic Peter too. You know, it's like he was at the point where he was in the last chapter going from person to person, starting with Lupin, his most potential helpful, because Lupin, I'm sure, has been the one who's been empathetic to him the most throughout the years. Then he goes to Sirius, who would have been his other longest standing friend. Then he goes to Ron, who was, you know, formerly his owner when he was a pet. And then Hermione, who had given him, like, 1 ounce of, you know, like, devil's advocate. And then finally to Harry, you know, and you're just like, come on, Peter. Like, how can you be going, like, literally falling down the ladder of potential people who could help you in such an obvious fashion? And so, you know, for Peter in this case, I mean, we know that the only thing he really truly cares about is his own skin.
Yeah.
And so it's like, you've got to imagine here, he's on a one-way ticket to Dementor Town.
Yeah.
Like, anything goes.
Anything goes,
you know,
yeah.
You try anything. And, of course, they've strapped him to the two worst people.
Oh, I know. Really, they really have. Like, I admire Ron for wanting to be attached to this person he's taken it personally, but, like, you know, if you've got this like person who is very capable, who's killed 12 people with one spell before.
Right.
And like, he might not have a wand at the moment, but still, like, Ron has a broken leg.
Ron has a broken leg, and Lupin is about to be a liability of his own.
I guess they're not accounting for that.
Which is surprising.
It is surprising.
I keep coming back to that with Lupin.
Yeah, because they have brought it up a couple of times.
Yes.
Yes, yeah. They have. So obviously it's about to become a huge problem for them. But I love that, like, Harry is now, his mind is buzzing. He's about to leave the Dursleys, or so he thinks. And it's like, it must feel like such an enormous relief. He's imagining, like, what would happen when he told the Dursleys he was going to live with the convict they'd seen on television, which I bet would be hilarious.
Yep. Yeah, and then we get the line from Lupin, who's like, one wrong move, Peter. And they finally, they're silently tramping their way up the grounds, castle lights slowly growing larger, like, we're almost there, we're gonna do it. Snape is still drifting weirdly, you know, there's that. And then finally you get the words, a cloud shifted. There were suddenly dim shadows on the ground. Their party was bathed in moonlight.
Yes, their party was bathed in moonlight. A sentence, Ben, that I have been complaining about for what feels like a month now.
I agree,
because this sentence, their party was bathed in moonlight, seems to indicate that you need direct contact with the moonlight, in order to transform. Because whether that cloud is there or not, the full moon is up there.
I agree. It does not feel like seeing the moon is necessary for the werewolf effects to take place.
It doesn't seem like it should be. The fact that it is up there seems like what matters. But clearly, the cloud shifted, and now they're bathed in moonlight. And now is when it is a problem, because this is what causes Lupin to transform.
Yes. Yep. And it says, Harry could see Lupin's silhouette. He had gone rigid. Then his limbs began to shake. Oh my, Hermione gasped. Oh my. He didn't take his potion tonight. He's not safe. And so, yeah, again, we discussed this in last week's episode, but there's the possibility that what's going on here is that, like, the cadence that you take the Wolfsbane potion seems like it's the week leading up to and possibly during the full moon. So maybe what's going on here is that, like, Lupin was diligent, you know, like 6 out of 7 days, and because he missed one, he's like more protected. But even then, the effects of the Wolfsbane potion sounds like he transforms into a wolf, but he gets to, like, keep his mind.
Yeah.
And in this case, he's about to transform into a werewolf because of the direct moonlight, and he's definitely not going to keep his mind.
Yeah.
So it's there's that.
Yeah. The transformation seems confusing.
Yes.
To say the least.
Yes.
But either way, he's turned into a full-fledged werewolf now. He didn't take enough potion, but, like, you're right, because earlier in the book, Snape brings him one and he drinks it and he's like, thank you, Severus. I should probably have another one tomorrow.
Right.
And it's like, okay. So it's like one night isn't enough.
Right. Yes. Yeah. It's definitely not enough.
Yeah. But yeah, whatever. Sirius very bravely tells everyone to run, jumps in front, transforms back into the dog. It is like almost unbelievable that nobody gets bitten by Lupin during all of this.
It is pretty unbelievable, and there's a few things that don't totally add up. I mean, not the least of which, because you've got as Lupin is transforming, he's still actively tethered to Peter and Ron.
Yes.
So it's like he's basically got fresh meat right there.
Yeah, like attached to him. And one of those people, he hates pretty bad.
He does.
At the moment.
Yes. So if any of that is making its way into his werewolf brain, it's like,
yeah,
him. The other person he hates a lot, Snape, is also completely incapacitated, and all we've been getting for the past several pages is just that his head is sort of like lolling weirdly in front of his...
Oh my gosh, you know. I know. Like, werewolves, like, hunt people, and, like, Snape, one of Lupin's mortal enemies, or at least Snape would consider Lupin one of his mortal enemies,
right,
is
yes,
floating there like a balloon. Just a giant buffet of greasy food.
Yes.
And he does not get bitten, and I cannot believe it.
Yep.
Nor does Peter, nor does Ron, despite being tied to a werewolf. Like, it is unbelievable no one gets bitten in this scenario.
I know.
But It feels like I would have thrown a real... you know what? Like, Ron getting bitten would have been so interesting.
It would have
because
been.
Think, like, then do you feel like they would have done, like, their own little marauder thing? Would Harry and Hermione have become animals, too?
Dude, a kid can dream.
A kid can dream!
There is nothing I want more than Animagus, Ron, Harry, and Hermione.
Oh,
or at the very least, in this case, Harry and Hermione.
Yeah.
You know?
Yes.
It would be so much fun.
It'd be so much fun.
Yeah.
But, alas, none of that happens because Sirius jumps in, tackles Lupin, is about to lose his fight with Lupin pretty bad. It's so such a bummer too that he doesn't just like kill Pettigrew on accident here.
Oh, I know. Yeah, that's the other thing as well. Yeah, it's like you've got somebody who like at the end of the day is about to go get a Dementor's kiss anyway. So if like what ends up happening is a like sort of out of control Lupin does it, it's like, are we really that upset about that?
I know. Like,
I don't think I would be.
Does Lupin even have to blame himself? Like, I'm sure he would. But like at the same time, like would Harry blame him? Like, nah, you sort of lost your mind there. Like it really wasn't you.
What were you to do?
You know,
what would be, the one thing I hadn't thought about for a long time though, is it would have been a lot of page time and build up to this whole Peter Pettigrew situation if he just promptly died in this chapter.
Well, it would have been a lot of build up. There's no doubt about that.
In hindsight, what we would do is we would like look at this story and be like, we just spent a whole book getting the story about how Ron's rat is actually a person, only to discover or only for him to then promptly die.
Yeah. But like what else could have happened is he could have bit Pettigrew and then Peter could have transformed into a rat and then he could have escaped and then Voldemort has Peter Pettigrew Rat Wolf Man at like just other werewolf, because the fact that werewolves exist and that Lupin can turn into a werewolf and the threat of being bitten is present in the books. Like no one is going to be bitten for the entirety of the books. Fenrir will bite Bill in human form.
Yep.
So that will still not really do much. He will kill Lavender Brown.
Yep.
So there's that. And he'll find Harry, Ron, and Hermione as a snatcher, but not in werewolf form.
Yep.
So they're not going to have to fight any more werewolves for the rest of the time. Lupin, never going to transform again.
It's never a problem.
Never a problem again.
Yeah.
Like, there's no... Like, for the fact that Lupin is a werewolf doesn't end up doing much except for this one breakout right here. I guess it also is the reason the Shrieking Shack, like so much of the whole story is set in motion because of Lupin being a werewolf.
True.
But like him being a werewolf doesn't do a ton for the rest of the story. But it's crazy that no one gets bitten, I think.
It is. Yeah. It is. However, that being said, well, I guess technically somebody does get pretty badly damaged. And we brought this up again in last week's episode, I think. But basically what we get is this is describing the battle between Sirius in dog form with Lupin in werewolf form. They were locked jaw to jaw, claws ripping at each other. And it sounds like it says Sirius was bleeding. There were gashes across his muzzle and back. This is sort of that, like, it leads to that big question of like damage you endure during Animagus form, whether or not it transfers ultimately to human form, because right. At no point does it seem like Sirius is dealing with these wounds. You know, even the scene that is about to come, it's like the Dementors that are the problem, like not the just being thrashed by a werewolf problem.
Right.
What I also think is interesting is that apparently back in the day, Sirius, like James must have been doing a fair bit of heavy lifting towards keeping Lupin like in his mindfulness, because otherwise, like we were just told that the reason that they became Animagus is because in Animagus form, they were able to control Lupin. But here in Animagus form, he's not able to by himself.
Right.
He's not even able to remotely get him to calm down.
It's not just that, but it's not even, you know, as far as Lupin the werewolf is concerned, like who has otherwise lost his mind, you know, it's not like he can rationalize between who is who and stuff. So like as far as that werewolf is concerned, two of the people are there. You know, like Peter is also there.
Oh, true.
He would have been helping too, presumably.
Yes, in the past at least. Yeah,
in the past. So like from that werewolf's point of view, this person and that person helped calm me down.
Yes.
But like, obviously, he's not calm at all.
Yeah.
Or maybe just a lot's happening, or they're like so concerned about just anyone getting bitten that they're just sort of acting impulsively.
Also
as
true.
Well.
Also true.
Through the Gryffindor is sponsored by Rocket Money. And look, I don't know about you guys, but keeping track of all of my different subscriptions is hard. Like, whether it's for work or for personal use, I have over like 10 different monthly subscriptions and then a handful of like annual and semi-annual ones to boot. And that's actually pared down from what it was. When I first started using Rocket Money, I was thrilled and also a little like dismayed to discover that I had plenty of subscriptions that we had no use for anymore, and I could quickly and easily cancel with just a few clicks in the app. But the ones that remain also still matter, because if you haven't noticed, prices seem to be going up lately, and Rocket Money is really great about letting me know whenever this happens. Like, have you ever signed up for something that's like five bucks for 6 months, and then after that it's like 20 bucks every month? Yay, we didn't tell you, whoops. That's because Rocket Money is a personal finance app that helps find and cancel your unwanted subscriptions. It monitors your spending and helps lower your bills so you can actually grow your savings. And what I really love is the dashboard. It's super easy to understand and just see all of these expenses neatly laid out in one spot. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has saved a total of 500 million in canceled subscriptions, saving members up to $740 a year when using all of the app's features. So stop wasting money on things you don't use. Just cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/griffin. That's rocketmoney.com/griffin, rocketmoney.com/griffin. Through the Gryffindor is sponsored by Shopify. Y'all, when we started making content online, I remember the very first time someone left a comment asking where they could buy our merch. And it was a wild moment. Almost like seriously, a rite of passage. I was on like cloud nine until I realized I had to find a way to make that possible. But that is where Shopify steps in. Shopify makes it so easy to take that comment to heart and put like all of our first t-shirts online available for, you know, that one person that wanted it. But now, years later, we rely on Shopify every day and have a whole lineup of products from coffee to candles and, of course, t-shirts. And while we always love the comments letting us know what y'all want, Shopify also makes it easy to know what y'all are loving. So upgrade your business and get the same checkout we use with Shopify. You can sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/griffin, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/griffin to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/griffin.
But then, Ben, this next paragraph has also been driving me crazy for so long. And it is, here's basically what happens. So Lupin is transformed. It says, Pettigrew had dived for Lupin's wand, right? Okay, so we know Pettigrew grabs the wand. It said, Ron, unsteady on his bandaged leg, fell. There was a bang, a burst of light, and Ron lay motionless on the ground. So Peter grabs the wand, stuns Ron. Has the quick thinking, as ever, of Wormtail to also attack Crookshanks.
Yes.
Because his plan is to turn into a rat and escape. But he has the wherewithal to realize there's still a cat. And while I can probably evade the people, that cat's going to get me.
The cat's been a problem all year long.
All year.
Yeah.
So impressive there. And then the next line, he attacks Ron, he attacks Crookshanks, and then Expelliarmus, Harry yelled, pointing his own wand at Pettigrew. Lupin's wand flew high into the air and out of sight. Stay where you are, Harry shouted, running forward. Too late, Pettigrew had transformed. So the question is, did Harry disarm him too late? Did he need the wand to transform? Because the way it's written sounds like Harry says Expelliarmus and then it says too late, he'd transform. Like, what is he too late with?
Right, right, you know? Right. Like did he like, because, and this is sort of like in the movie, like you sort of see like Pettigrew sort of like point the wand at himself. And then I think it even gets like shot out of his hand maybe, but it's like he's already like slowly going down.
In the movie, it's very clear he needed the wand to do it.
Yes. Yeah. Because
he points it directly at himself.
So this, to me, it's almost like one of those things where it's like, it's maybe like meant to be left a little bit vague, because otherwise there is sort of that question as to whether or not, like even in the prophecy, the phrasing that... the servant who will return to his master has been chained for 12 years. It's like chained kind of requires someone to be stuck somewhere. And so obviously when it's written, you're supposed to interpret the misdirect to be Sirius, who is very clearly chained in Azkaban prison.
Yeah.
Peter, however, if he can just transform at any point in time, he's not really chained in any way.
Right.
You know, it's like there's nothing really like absolutely keeping him there. It's mostly just that he's in hiding all the time. So,
right.
And then the fact that he dives for the wand, I mean, I guess on the one hand, yeah, he needs to, Ron's not really going to be much of a threat anyway. Crookshanks, this might be a hot take and apologies. There's a piece of me that almost thinks that he could have like killed from like a big picture script writing standpoint.
Like if you're writing the rest of the books.
If you're writing the rest of the books, I might kill Crookshanks here. There already is going to be the like advent of the Marauder's Map, which Harry will like lose to Moody. I think next year. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like one of those things where sometimes it's like a little bit too like OP, so you kind of like take it away. Otherwise it like solves too many problems. Same thing with Time Turners, where like they're going to get like smashed during the Battle of the Department of Mysteries. To me, it's not that big of a deal. I'm not like advocating for cat death in stories or anything like that. It's mostly just, otherwise you have to do something with Crookshanks for the rest of the series. And it seems like a way to just single-handedly do it in one fell swoop.
I know, you're right. Because it's also just like another evil thing you can't have had Peter do.
Yes, exactly. You know? Yeah. It's a very villainous behavior to be mean to a pet.
Yes, to kill a pet.
Yeah. Just ask John Wick.
Yeah, right.
Sorry. But so anyway, I agree with you though. So it's like, yeah, he's doing a lot of things here. I'm inclined to believe that Peter can't do it without the wand.
I kind of feel like it's written that way too, because like it's the words too late. It's like it says, Harry, stay where you are, Harry shouted running forward. Too late, he'd transformed. Like what if Harry had said that earlier, he wouldn't have transformed, you know?
Yeah.
Like it's the combination of disarming and then getting there too late that makes it sound like he really... Now, another... I have seen the theory about this exact situation because the... Because, like, if you just read about Animagus, in general, you don't need the wand. It's just at will.
Okay.
Obviously, Sirius can do it.
We know that Sirius can do it because when he's in prison, there's no way in the world they're letting him live in Azkaban prison with his wand.
Right. It is possible that Peter is capable of going back and forth at will as well, but in this unique scenario, he specifically needs the wand because of whatever spell they use to force him out of the transformation. That like,
oh, I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
I see. Like, yeah. So like they've basically, whatever Lupin and Sirius pointed their wands at him, or they're like, it won't hurt as long as he's just a rat.
Yeah.
You know, I suppose there's a point to that. Like maybe it's almost like a safety switch that got turned on. It's like he had to like turn it off or something.
Right. Yeah. Like they like forced him into like staying in human form.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Whereas, and then he needs the wand to like undo that. So that like, that's a possibility as well. But like, I think you're right. Like, to me, at whatever the situation, whether he normally can do it, whether he was under some sort of extra protection, I think in this moment, he needed the wand to transform.
Yeah.
Is what it looks like to me.
That's what it looks like.
Yeah. If you disagree, let us know. But like, I have gone back and forth on it a million times.
Well, I don't think anybody out there is going to have any difficulty whatsoever coming to the conclusion that Peter sucks.
I know.
And so it's like, I love the world where Sirius is just better at magic than
I
Peter.
Know. Like, I know. It's not like a sticking point in any way.
Yeah, nobody, this is not stirrups on brooms.
It's like, not.
No,
it's not stirrups on brooms.
Yeah.
It's just like, I just don't know how to interpret it correctly.
I know.
Because canon information says you don't need it, and the way it's written really makes it seem like he needed it.
I agree with you. This is an unrelated question that I just have to ask. Do you think after Peter is given his silver hand that when he transforms, if he ever did into rat form again, that the little rat would have a silver hand too?
Oh, yes, I do think so.
Yeah, I do too.
Yeah, I think he'd have a silver hand. Kind of give him away.
Yeah, he'd be like, clink, clink,
clink, clink, clink. Yeah, it's actually not very helpful. Yeah. But to that end, he'll never do that.
He'll never do that.
In the same way Lupin will never be a werewolf again, like, we will never see Peter as a rat again. He tells Voldemort, and he's like, oh, you know I have a way with rats. And it sounds like he has been a rat again. But, like, we, the audience, will never deal with Peter as being a rat again this particular moment.
Yeah, please see my previous point about Crookshanks. It's sort of like,
right,
this plot device is over.
Right.
Like, it was a thing, now it's not a thing.
It's a thing, and now it's not a thing. Which is, like that very thing is what will trip you up in Goblet of Fire, because it seems like that is what happens a lot. Like, there's a plot device, it was a thing, we used it, it's gone.
Right, yeah.
And it's like, so, and like, Polyjuice Potion, that felt like a year two thing. Right. And now we're not going to use it anymore. But alas, we are. It's going to be the main plot device of book four.
And I mean, Animagus form is also going to be a huge plot device for book four with Rita Skeeter.
Yes, with Rita Skeeter, yes. Yep. You think like, oh, Animagus, that was last book. Nope, it's back.
There's yet another unregistered Animagus running around.
Yes.
Okay, anyway, we'll trudge forward. See, this is exactly what we do with this chapter.
I know.
It's like, you think it's short, and then it's not.
It's not. There's so many things. There's like there's vague, I want clear explanations for how things work.
I know. Yeah.
So anyway, Sirius has basically lost the fight with Lupin or whatever, but Harry calls out to him, Sirius, Pettigrew transformed. And this acts like a stimulant, for Sirius, who scrambles up again and tries to go hunt down Peter in the dark.
Yes.
Yes. Meanwhile, I love this line too. Harry and Hermione dashed over to Ron. So I like this line because, like, friendship is like a huge theme in this particular book.
Yes.
And like the, like, Sirius saying, you know, he would have died for his friends or whatever. So like Harry and Hermione are like at sort of at a crossroads. Like, do they help Sirius try and run Peter down or whatever? Or do they go check out Ron first? And they both go over to Ron first. And I love that for both of them.
Yes. I totally agree. It's also not totally clear what spell Peter cast on him.
No, it's not.
Yeah, and so Hermione asks, what did he do to him? Ron's eyes were only half closed. His mouth hung open. He was definitely alive. They could hear him breathing, but he didn't seem to recognize them. So this has always sort of like given me just like a like very, very mild like obliviate.
Yeah, like he didn't seem to recognize them. It's like, was he just stunned? Was he like obliterated in some way?
Yeah, I guess they haven't really learned stunning spells yet. So no. maybe it's just stupefied and they just don't recognize it.
Yeah, like Peter can just do it like non-verbally.
I wouldn't hate that.
Yeah.
I mean, stupefy seems like a, like all things being equal, kind of like low tier ability, which even just sort of feels like it would be right in Peter's wheelhouse.
It does. Plus, Lockhart's move last book was Obliviate, and it's just like the same thing.
Also, Ron doesn't end up losing his memory long term at all.
Yeah, so I think it's just a stunning spell. But again, I cannot believe he didn't kill Crookshanks, or honestly, for that matter, like Ron. Like,
yes, I know. Yeah. I mean, and probably on some level, again, this speaks to just the way that Peter's mind does work rather quickly. Like, you know, he's in a bind and he manages to effectively disarm the two characters present who could have done something to probably slow him down.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it is effective if nothing else. Let's see here. It does say Harry looked around, Black and Lupin both gone. They had no one but Snape for company, still hanging unconscious in midair.
Missing everything, very unfortunately, because he's going to come to very soon.
Very soon indeed. There is a tiny little it's a theory that was presented to us by a fan while we were on tour that I will bring up at some point because I think it's a little bit interesting. I think it gets disproved, but just important to keep in mind the fact that the two people who are left there are Snape and Ron in particular. Snape still currently unconscious.
Okay.
We'll continue forward.
There you go.
Let's see here. But then from beyond the range of their vision, they heard a yelping, a whining, a dog in pain. Sirius, Harry muttered, staring into the darkness. He had a moment's indecision, but there was nothing they could do for Ron at the moment. And by the sound of it, Black was in trouble.
Yes.
Sirius was in trouble.
Yes, Sirius was in trouble. Oh, does it say Sirius?
It says Sirius.
Oh, okay.
Yes. Yeah. That time it says Sirius. Back to Sirius again. Let's see here. So then this is the point where basically they set off on a run. The yelping seemed to be coming from near the lake. They pelted towards it. Harry was running flat out, and he felt cold without realizing what it must mean.
Right, which is, of course, the Dementors arriving.
Yes.
Yes.
The yelping stopped abruptly. As they reached the lake shore, they saw why Sirius had turned back into a man. He was crouched on all fours, his hands over his head.
Right. So the turn back into a man part, I like circled that because I was like, to what end? Like how is being a man better than being a dog in this situation? You know, like the Dementors, they can't feel the dog as much. They, you know, he, it seems like easier to hide, faster to move. Like why turn back? And my answer is kind of what we've been getting at is like that. He's so injured as the dog that he needs to turn back into the man because his injuries as the dog are bad.
Yes, yeah. And I would agree with that completely, especially just because it sounds like the noise that they're hearing is like that sort of like whining, yelping, dog in pain. So it seems like whatever Sirius is like dog form, if you can almost imagine it as like a totem or something of yourself, it's almost like you can project it forward to take some damage forward. You and then once it's worn out, you have to sort of step in and you're now like unshielded,
right?
Which nothing is ever described it that way. There's no canon
like that. And obviously Scabbers is missing a finger because Peter is missing a finger.
Yeah, so it seems like your human form can dictate your animal form,
right?
But maybe not the other way.
Because otherwise, I just don't know why he would turn back into a man here.
Yeah. But what I think is interesting is that what we get from Sirius is he's moaning. It says, "No," he moaned. "No, please." And I think that this is kind of fascinating. And this is going to kind of go back to the point that Jay and I were establishing earlier on in the chapter. Because Sirius has spent 12 years imprisoned by the Dementors, right? And so it's like he is feeling the effects of the Dementors now. He's feeling them the way that Harry has been feeling them all year.
Yeah.
The question is, why?
Why? Why? Not only why, but how did they suddenly find him? Because the Dementors have been at Hogwarts all year.
They have.
And Sirius has been in the woods the whole year.
Yes.
What suddenly made them descend upon Sirius? How did they find him in this moment? The answer we've already talked about.
Yes.
Yeah.
Basically, what we believe it comes down to is exactly that moment where you get that line, Sirius's gaunt face broke into the first true smile Harry had seen upon it. The difference it made was startling, as though a person 10 years younger were shining through the starved mask. Mm-hmm. For a moment, he was recognizable as the man who had laughed at Harry's parents' wedding.
Yes. So what happens is Sirius asks Harry if he wants to come live with him. Harry says yes, and Sirius is so happy that it summons the Dementors.
He basically becomes a beacon
of
happiness. And again, it goes back to that sentiment that he explains as to why the Dementors couldn't affect him while he was staying there for so long. He's like, I knew I was innocent. It wasn't a happy thought. Like, you know, but it is something. It allows him to keep his sanity.
Yes.
Now Sirius is happy. Now there is something they can take from him.
Yes. And I also think this harkens back to the Quidditch match as well.
Yes.
Because like they say that like, oh, the Dementors are stationed around the school. There's nothing happening there. Like, but like they're still surprised that they came to the Quidditch match. And the explanation is that there must have been so many happy people or whatever that or there must have been so many, like people they saw it as like a buffet.
Like a buffet, yeah.
Yeah. And whilst that is possible and possibly true, they don't show up to any more Quidditch matches, maybe true. Because they get yelled at so severely after the first one.
Right.
But who else is prominently at the first Quidditch match but Sirius Black?
But Sirius,
who is watching his godson, Harry, play the Quidditch, and it is reminding him remarkably of James, his best friend. So I think at the Quidditch match is the only other time Sirius is happy. And like they're specifically looking for Sirius.
Yes.
And
yes,
so
indeed.
Like Sirius is there. Like, I don't think they actually come. I don't think they actually care about the other students. Like, they know who they're looking for.
Yeah.
And as soon as they see Sirius, like, they're like, oh, wow, there he is. They come swarming in. Obviously, there's a ton of people there. And Dumbledore is like, yo, what on earth do you think you're doing? There's no Sirius Black here, but there is.
There is.
There yeah. is. And yeah. he's just had an extremely happy thought. And that, I think, is what summoned them to the Quidditch match, too.
Oh, Sirius and his love for Harry.
Mm, yes. Getting him hurt right now.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. But then it says, and then Harry saw them, Dementors, at least 100 of them, gliding in a black mass around the lake toward them. He had spun around, the familiar icy cold penetrating his insides, fog starting to obscure his vision.
Yes, so this is where Harry is like, oh my gosh, we're going to have to do something because they're about to like deliver the kiss. And so on the fly, he starts coaching Harry or Hermione how to try and cast the Patronus, which she has no idea how to do it at all. And he's just like, Hermione, think of something happy. And this, again, Harry's instincts coming over or like taking over where he just sort of like knows what to do in the moment. Because like Hermione does not have a plan in this moment. And Harry does. And he's like trying to teach other people. He's trying to do the spell. And honestly, the thought he lands on is, I'm going to live with my godfather. I'm leaving the Dursleys. And I am frankly astonished that this does not successfully create a Patronus for him.
I agree with you completely. Like, the only thing I can think in this situation is that he is just so overwhelmed by the sheer numbers yeah. around him. Because... This news is some of the like singular best news that Harry has had his whole life.
Yes.
In
a couple of chapters, we're going to read a line where Harry is reflecting on the fact that Peter escaped and he's like feeling bad. And it's talking about the reasons Harry's like mood is down or whatever. But it's like the main thing he's upset about is returning to the Dursleys.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
He has heard the prophecy that Peter's going to return to Voldemort, that Voldemort's going to come back. Like, and he knows it's playing out, but what he's actually upset about is living with the Dursleys.
Living with the Dursleys.
So, like, yeah. to him, that's worse.
Yes, yes, which is just unbelievable. Come on, Vernon and Petunia.
I know,
Dudley.
Guys.
Goodness gracious. It shouldn't yes. be that bad to live there. I also think that there's, like, a really just kind of interesting sentiment that we can make about Dementors in general, sort of with that, Hermione, think of something happy. This could be brought up at any point in the series, but we know that the intention, the underlying function of Dementors is supposed to be a visual representation of depression. And what I think is so fascinating about it is that they feed on your happy feelings. And the way to combat them is by thinking of something happy. And it's like this almost, in a way, is depression in a nutshell. Like, depression is like a weird roommate that gets to go and live inside of your brain that like takes all of your happy thoughts and shreds them. And one of the best things that you can do on any given day to combat your own depression is positive thinking, positive affirmation, positive self-talk.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's reminding yourself of the good things in your life, which is also the force needed to create the Patronus. So it's interesting because the thing they feed on is also the thing that is used to defeat them.
Right.
And that is how depression works.
There you go.
In a very simplistic capacity.
There you go.
Anyway,
yep.
Just a PSA for mental health.
Yep. Yeah. on that note, so Harry... or Hermione collapses next to him because she is unable to do the Patronus spell, and which is interesting too because Harry has been the one collapsing all year, and this is the first time Hermione will collapse.
Yes.
I mean, there are 100 Dementors here, but you'd think that'd make it just that much worse for Harry. So maybe his happy thoughts are like keeping him standing a little bit more. Plus, he's been practicing against the Boggart, so like maybe he just has like more experience, but I'm always curious that Hermione collapses when Harry doesn't here. But then he also has his next happy thought, which is that Sirius is innocent, which I just think it's worth pointing out, like that for Harry, the fact that Sirius is innocent is a super happy thought.
Yes.
But for Sirius, it has been an unhappy thought the entire time.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
That's a very good point. That is like his main thing. Like, I knew I was innocent. It wasn't a happy thought.
Yes.
Yeah. I love that.
It's
That's really good.
But So he's able to produce the feeble, formless Patronus. And this is where we have the unusual behavior of a singular Dementor.
Yes.
Who halts very close to him. It cannot walk through the cloud of silver Miss Harry had conjured, but a dead slimy hand slid out from under the cloak. It made a gesture as to sweep the Patronus aside. So this Dementor is acting very unusually. Even Fudge will comment on it later, saying like, never dreamed they would attack an innocent boy. Like, to him, it's pretty surprising that they did this.
Yes.
Which, I mean, maybe it just shows how ignorant Fudge is, and like, Dementors are just very dangerous creatures and they don't actually care about innocence or anything like that.
Sure.
That's possible. However, this Dementor is the only one that does it.
Yes.
That acts unusually. And like, the fact that it's able to like push the Patronus aside, even in its mist form, it seems pretty unusual to me, because it shouldn't be able to do anything to it.
It feels like a particularly like OP Dementor,
mm-hmm.
out of everybody else. Mm-hmm. Like almost maybe like it's a little bit more powerful. And I agree with you. Like the other thing too is that like the Dementors guard and reside within Azkaban prison all the time. They are there all day, every day. That is the eternal punishment that the prisoners who have to reside there are, you know, destined to deal with. And they're not just like willy-nilly sucking out souls from everyone who is there. So the behavior that they would attack the student, it's like it does go that much further.
Right.
It is that unusual.
Right. Like, because like certainly they must have instructions at Azkaban not to do that.
Exactly.
But at the end of the day, those people are still guilty and they don't do it.
Exactly.
And they would definitely have instructions not to attack innocent students.
Right.
And yet, so this isn't even a guilty person. This is a straight up, obviously innocent person. And this Dementor is going to attack them, or Harry, anyway.
Right. Yep. So then the next line we've got, so Harry is continuing, you know, he's innocent, expect no Patronum. And then it says, he could feel them watching him, hear their rattling breath like an evil wind around him. The nearest Dementor seemed to be considering him.
Mm-hmm.
What do you mean the nearest Dementor is considering him? Yeah. What does that mean?
It
doesn't seem like this is the type of thing for Dementors to do.
Yeah, they don't have eyes.
They have one-track minds. Like, yeah. You know, they're, yeah. And then it says, then it raised both its rotting hands and lowered its hood. Where there should have been eyes, there were only thin gray scabbed skin that stretched blankly over empty sockets. Mm. But there was a mouth, a gaping shapeless hole, sucking the air with the sound of a death rattle.
Ugh, creepy, creepy, creepy. So if you can't tell what we're getting at here, our potential theory is that this particular Dementor is capital Big D, not Dudley Dursley, but Death.
But Death.
Yes.
And why would it be taking such a particular interest in Harry is also kind of fascinating, because what does it say the third brother ultimately did? You know, it took the invisibility cloak. It went and spent all of life, or Ignotus was able to go and spend all of his life until one day he would go on to greet Death like an old friend.
Yes, but he doesn't give the cloak back.
But so then what or who is this potential capital D Dementor looking at, if not Ignotus's last living descendant?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's like, if he's considering him in this moment, is it like Ignotus?
Yes, like, wait a minute. No way, no way. Because Ignotus gives the cloak on to his next of kin, and they continue to hide from Death for, you know, generations later. So it is possible that Death is noticing Harry is the last of the Peverils and is about to attack this kid, because to him, this is like getting the last laugh.
Yes.
Like, it's like, oh, innocent boy, doesn't matter. He's not that innocent. He cheated me. This family line cheated me a long time ago. And there's been so. Now, also sub theory, is that perhaps what is unusual about Harry is that he has two souls.
there is, of course, that as well. And so if at any point in time, you know, Voldemort had been wanted and the Dementors were sort of like given, like, you know, the blacklist, so to speak, of potential people to track down, it's like, hey, wait a second, Voldemort, could it be?
Yes. You're right. Like, it is possible that they are seeing Harry and not wrecking. And like, look at this is the consideration. They're like, innocent person, very not innocent person.
yes, indeed, yeah.
So and maybe this Dementor is about to attack Harry and defeat the Dark Lord.
Yes, I mean, and I think we've even made the video before, Once Upon a Time, could a Dementor destroy a Horcrux? Like if it had absorbed the Horcrux into itself, Voldemort Horcrux in this particular case, would that be the destruction of the Horcrux? And I think the answer to that question is yes.
Yeah, I think so. Absolutely. Sorry, I'm yawning right there. That's okay. Not a boring thought.
That's okay. Okay, so anyway, a paralyzing terror filled Harry so that he couldn't move or speak. His Patronus flickered and died. White fog was blinding him. He had to fight Expecto Patronum. He couldn't see, and in the distance, he heard a familiar screaming, Expecto Patronum! He groped in the mist for Sirius and found his arm. They were going to take him. They weren't going to take him, but a pair of strong, clammy hands suddenly attached themselves around Harry's neck. They were forcing his face upward. He could feel its breath. It was going to get rid of him first. Goodness gracious. It's just awful.
It is awful. Also, this I just want to point out that, like, in the movies, I am not, like, they do that thing where, like, the Dementors are, like, sucking on their face.
Kind of vacuum cleaner.
Kind of vacuum cleanering their face, like, from afar. But that is not what happens when they get the kiss. Like, they keep doing that to Sirius until, like, eventually his soul just sort of, like, decides, like, oh, that was enough suction. Guess I'll float out of Sirius's mouth now.
Yeah.
And it's a nice visual for the audience to be able to see the soul floating there. But earlier in this very book, Lupin describes it much differently, where he says that the Dementors clamp onto your face and suck out your soul through your mouth.
Much more visceral.
Yeah. So I just want to say, I feel like the movies did not get it right.
I feel bad for anybody who was trying to listen to this episode as they like gently drift off to sleep and just had to hear us say, clamp their jaws onto your face.
Yeah, that's
good,
right.
Good visuals. Anyway, good night. Good night to that person.
Good night. Hope you enjoyed that.
Yeah. Let's see here. But this is the moment. Through the fog that was drowning him, he thought he saw a silvery light growing brighter and brighter. He felt himself fall forward onto the grass. Mm-hmm. Harry opened his eyes. The Dementor must have released him. The blinding light was illuminating the grass around him. The screaming had stopped and the cold was ebbing away.
Yes.
So basically, this is of course Harry witnessing the Patronus in real time.
Right. This is Time Turner shenanigans from across the lake. Future Harry is across the lake. He is the one casting the Patronus, aka Prongs.
Yes.
Let's see. But Harry still cannot make out what the animal is. He can see it galloping. He knows it has hooves. He says it was as bright as a unicorn, which I just wanted to point out, this is my other theory in this video.
Yes, I know. Yeah.
There's so many in this one, which is, could, like, he mistakes it for a unicorn. Like, could a unicorn fight off a Dementor? Should it have been like one-on-one? Could they repel them as well?
They feel like opposites to me.
They do, because like unicorns are described as being extremely pure creatures, and like to the centaurs, like the act of killing one is like an act against nature.
Yeah,
almost. And not for nothing, but if death was a Dementor, unicorn blood stops what?
Death.
So there you go. But like, I think the obvious problem, if a unicorn could fight off a Dementor, is just having access to a unicorn.
Yeah. Like, yeah. How often you're like, oh crap, you know, oh man, can you remember Magnolia Crescent and Wisteria Walk?
Oh yeah.
That is the location that the Dementors will attack.
Yes.
Harry and Dudley at some point in time. It's like, if only I kept my unicorn with me.
If only.
We could bust that out right now. I wouldn't even have to use magic.
No problem.
Everybody should have a pocket unicorn.
Exactly. Pocket unicorns. I've been saying it for years. Never leave the house without one.
Exactly.
So to me, headcanon, unicorn, could fight a Dementor. Sadly, hard to have access to one at the right moment, which is why you should probably just learn how to do Expecto Patronum.
Yes. Yes, indeed. Yeah. Yep. Let's see here. And it does also say, Harry watched it canter to a halt as it reached the opposite shore. For a moment, Harry saw, by its brightness, somebody welcoming it back, raising his hand to pat it. Someone who looked strangely familiar, but it couldn't be.
But it couldn't be.
And at that point in time, Harry finally can't handle it anymore, and he just falls forward and faints.
Yes.
And so this is, of course, like that moment where you, the reader, going through the story for the first time, cannot help but be like, is James there?
I know.
Like, because, I mean, at this point in time, you've largely been led to believe that Peter has been dead, that Sirius has been in prison, you know, for, like, all of this time. And now, all of a sudden, you've got potentially, like, all four Marauders back on the Hogwarts ground at the same time together.
It's yes.
Like, what could possibly explain how this could be the case? Or what is the world where there's a sitcom that involves Sirius's house living with his best friend James and his son Harry, and they all just have a good time together. Oh,
hearty laughs
all around. More like barking laughs.
Barking laughs indeed.
Yes, but I mean, it's like you desperately, I know that I desperately wanted it to be James. You know, it's like, could it be?
Because it would just be so great for Harry. All of a sudden his dad's back.
I know, but then it's like, where you been, Pops?
Yeah, I know, right? Yeah, where have you been this whole time, James? You know?
Right.
That'd be a whole different, like, what if it was James?
I know, yeah.
Well, oh, man. Geez.
Yeah, that's a wild one.
There's a different what if, isn't it?
I know, yeah. What if it was James who saved him? For one, the only problem with that is it does undercut Harry's own, you know, great moment as well. Because
it does,
it's a huge step forward for Harry as a wizard. This is where we can examine that fan-submitted idea just a little bit.
Okay.
I don't think it ultimately holds up. However, I do think it's interesting. One of the big things within the wizarding world that we've always done or always interpreted is that the way that time travel works is that everything that has always happened already always happened. So, like, McNair always slams the axe down into the fence post or the pumpkin or whatever it is that he hits instead of Buckbeak. And it's like, he does that the first time, he does that the second time. You just don't have all the context to know what's going on.
Right.
And the question posed by someone who we met on tour was basically like, what if that's not absolutely the case? What if similar things happen, but when you go back in time, it's almost like you can change what the outcomes or like who is involved with each of the outcomes. So maybe McNair does swing the axe and hit Buckbeak on the first pass. And then on the second pass, it's like, well, Buckbeak's not there. So he still swings the axe, but this time he just destroys a pumpkin or a fence post or whatever.
Right.
So the idea here is that the person who's going to go and collect Snape or is going to go collect Harry, Sirius, and Hermione is going to be Snape with Ron.
Right.
And so this fan submitted idea is that in this particular instance, things aren't the same when you time Turner. And in this particular instance, it's actually Snape across the way mm-hmm. who casts his own Do Patronus.
Right. Which then would also like canter and stuff like that.
Could also canter.
Yeah.
And that way it's actually like Snape who is the one who is saving them against all odds from the very fate he was attempting to, you know,
yeah,
send Sirius towards anyway,
right?
And what if Harry's collateral damage? Yeah. So anyway, I thought it was kind of interesting because it's sort of like a different way to interpret the time turneriness of it. However, I feel like in a couple of pages here, Snape is going to tell Fudge that's going to say, "What amazes me the most is the behavior of the Dementors. You've really no idea what made them retreat, Snape." "Nope, Minister. By the time I'd come around, they were heading back to their positions at the entrances." So it seems unlike Snape to me to not take credit.
Especially when all he's doing is taking credit for as much of the heroics here as possible.
Especially that. Yeah. Yes. And at that point in time, absolutely zero time turner shenanigans would have happened. And Snape seems pretty jazzed about the fact that he's getting an Order of Merlin second or first class. So.
Right, yeah. So there's that. Plus, Harry seems to recognize the person across the lake as his father, and like James and Sirius or Snape don't look
the
similar.
Same. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. It would be weird for him to be like, "Dad?" And it's like, No, it's me.
It's me.
Snape.
I know. plus, Snape would be arriving on like the wrong side of the lake here.
There's also that.
There's also that.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
he would normally otherwise have to be coming from the other side.
Yeah. Not a perfect fit, but it's just sort of a fun thought.
Yeah. Fun thought, but I don't think that's how time travel works in the wizarding world.
I know, but yeah. I mean, it seems like the laws that we have established is exactly as I described it before. Everything that always happened, always happened.
Yes.
Yep.
Everything that happened.
Yep.
Yeah. There wasn't a first time because
Both
even
times.
The first time, the second thing was already happening.
It's all just a perspective shift.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. Which we're going to be able to dive into in great detail in next week's chapter.
Yes, we are.
Hermione's Secret.
Hermione's Secret.
In the meantime, Jay, do you have a review for us?
Well, I sure do. Let me pull it up here on my phone for us. Today's review says, you don't know what you're missing. Listen to this podcast. You know you want to. Hey, brother, absolutely love this podcast. Cleaning my house becomes so much easier to bear now that I have this to look forward to every week. Love that the speed of this allows me to catch all those details I've missed all over the years. The cherry on top is my one-year-old finds your voices very soothing and likes to watch the YouTube version right along with me. Well,
that's amazing.
That's amazing, because then we have some soothing voices over here. Question, what if Harry had gotten caught and kissed by a Dementor? Would it have gotten the Horcrux soul or Harry's soul or both? So we kind of already answered this in today's episode, but I thought it was an appropriate question for today's episode.
It is a great question for today's episode. So I think there's almost no way in the world that I can imagine that the piece of Voldemort's soul could be discernible separately from Harry's. Like, I don't know exactly how that would work.
I don't know how that would work either. I suspect if a Dementor clamped its jaws onto Harry's face.
Yeah, as it should.
As it should be depicted in the TV show.
Actually, I don't know if I want to see that.
It's not a matter of whether you want to see it, Ben.
It's what happens.
This is the horrible reality. That's a good point. Dementors.
It's a good point. Okay, yeah, carry on.
I can't imagine that it doesn't get both of them.
I can't imagine that it doesn't get both of them as well. I do think that it would destroy the Horcrux. And the reason is that it doesn't seem like the population of Dementors seems like it ebbs and flows on the basis of how much despair and depression basically is existing inside of like a given area. So like, I feel like in Half-Blood Prince, it's almost like very misty everywhere. Like the weather pattern seems to be changing.
Yes.
And they're like, they basically explain it by being like the Dementors, they're breeding like crazy. But I also, that makes me think that like if happiness were to be on the rise, that those Dementors would like almost like cease to be as well.
Dementors are what are called amortal beings. Also, before I continue, I just want to say that review was submitted by Pepperoni and Cheese, so thank you for that review.
Thanks, Pepperoni and Cheese, the way that I eat pizza.
Yes, Dementors are amortal beings, not immortal, amortal.
Yes.
Meaning that they are not truly alive, so they can't really die, but they also don't give birth. Like they said breeding, but that's sort of the wrong word. They're kind of like poltergeists. They're sort of like manifested by the amount of like depression in the area. So when they say breeding, it just means they're causing a lot of depression because of their own effects. And the more depression there is, the more they're able to just sort of like into existence.
Yes.
So it's not like they are a living thing upon which the soul could continue to live in. And it's not like they would become the Horcrux or something. Not like every Dementor who is delivered a kiss has suddenly become a Horcrux for that person.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. So the big thought in my mind is basically like if it could take the piece of Voldemort's soul from Harry and then whatever environmental circumstances exist that cause that particular Dementor to cease to be, then so would the piece of soul inside. And then in the meantime, it doesn't really feel like that soul is like inside of like a proper container either. And so it just sort of seems like the container, I guess the container really hasn't been destroyed, but there really isn't a container either, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So to me, it almost feels like whatever ethereal force that souls normally through natural death ascend to is almost like once it is removed is also where it goes.
Right. Right. I mean, yeah, that I agree with you. Like, I don't think any, it seems hard to argue that like they would absorb the soul. And then as long as that Dementor hadn't like dissipated, like you could get it back or something. Like that's not like anchoring. It seems like they're eating it or something. Like they're consuming it and destroying it.
Yes. Yeah. I am inclined to agree with you.
I want to say that like, even like Lupin says, like there's no recovery from it.
Yes.
Which also sounds, because if there was recovery from it, it'd be like, well, if we find the Dementor in question, we could perhaps extract the soul.
It almost makes me a little sad that at no point in time, they don't like look at like the Locket Horcrux as like a Scooby snack for a Dementor.
Yeah.
You know, like sort of like throw it out and be like, What would you do with that? It's like when you see that, what do you think?
That would be such a unique way to destroy one. Do you think a Dementor could suck the soul out of a Horcrux, like an object Horcrux?
I don't know. I mean, it certainly doesn't have like a jaw to clamp.
Like a mouth.
Yeah, like to clamp itself onto.
Yeah, I'm inclined to think they couldn't.
I'm thinking no.
Yeah, like they could for Harry because he's like a person.
Yeah,
or maybe even for Nagini, I suppose.
Possibly for Nagini. It's also kind of like one of those columns where it's like, while not everything that is capable of destroying a Horcrux is a good thing, i.e., like Basilisk Venom or Fiendfire. It also, I don't want to give them the utility of being capable of destroying something so horrific.
Right.
So it's like, I think in my mind, it's almost like I'm like resisting even allowing that to be something that you could put like in their like plus column.
Right.
You know, like there is a feature of a Dementor. They technically can destroy Horcruxes. So that would be like my
yeah.
It's like I have like a moral objection to that scenario.
To them being useful.
Yes.
Right. Whereas like but not so much that like the Basilisk thing is useful.
That is like destructive in the to quote like a Name of the Wind capacity. It's almost like it's destructive in a broken glass kind of way. It's only dangerous if you interact with it.
Right.
Whereas I think depression is dangerous regardless.
Yeah. That's true.
So
that's true.
That would be my particular take on that particular situation.
Okay.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
All right. So Dementor would have gotten both souls. Horcrux destroyed.
Yes.
Voldemort's that much closer to death, although honestly without Harry he's probably going to be okay.
Yeah.
So
there you go. All right, well, that I think that does everything for today.
I think that does do everything today. Thank you guys so much for listening to this episode. Make sure you join us next week for chapter 21, Hermione's Secret, here on Through the Gryffindor.
Today's episode was edited by Ethan Edgehill. Vaishon Brandon does our art. Catherine Stein is our production manager, and the show is hosted by me and Jonathan Carlin.
Through the Gryffindor is brought to you by Wizarding Candles. Ever wish you could bring the magic of the Wizarding World right into your home? Well, now you can with our very own collection of Wizarding Candles. We work hard to make sure that these aren't just candles. We aim to offer a brand new enchanting experience each month. All of our handcrafted candles are inspired by iconic places, spells, creatures, and relics from the magical world. Whether it's the cozy scent of the burrow or the mystical aroma of the enchanted forest, our candles transport you to the heart of the magic. The fun doesn't stop there. Hidden at the bottom of every candle is a surprise charm waiting just for you. Each charm is a unique keepsake and carefully selected to match the theme of each candle. We have new scents every single month, and you can save 10% on a subscription when you sign up at wizardandcandles.com.